Good morning. My name is John Tupel, and I'm an alcoholic. Let's stand and have a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, wisdom to know the difference. The topic of this meeting is AA reaching minorities. And when I got the loving invitation from GSO to chair this meeting, I thought, why are they asking me to chair a meeting on is AA reaching minorities? And thought about that topic and thought about, you know, what that means. Are we reaching minorities? What is a minority? I guess it depends on the setting you're in, but I think historically we think of at least the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous and the organization out of which Alcoholics Anonymous grew was predominantly white, male, conservative, Protestant, middle class, college educated, which I fit into all those categories. And when I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there were people there to greet me that were white, male, Protestant, conservative, college educated, middle class. And I think the question we're trying to answer in is AA reaching minorities is how effective are we at crossing barriers of culture, of race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, whatever those language, how effective are we in crossing those barriers? Because clearly alcoholism is no respecter of any of those barriers, as it states in the foreword of the second edition. It says, alcohol being no respecter of persons, we are an accurate cross-section of America and in distant lands. The same democratic evening up process is going on by personal religious affiliation. We include Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Hindus, and a sprinkling of Muslims, Buddhists. More than 15% of us are women. That was written in 1955. Then in the fourth edition, in the foreword, it says, when the phrase, we are people who normally would not mix, page 17 of this book was written in 1939, it referred to a fellowship composed largely of men and a few women of quite similar social, ethnic, and economic backgrounds. Like so much of AA's basic texts, those words have proved to be far more visionary than the founding members could have ever imagined. The stories added to this edition represent a membership whose characteristics of age, gender, and race, and culture have widened and deepened to encompass virtually everyone the first 100 members could have hoped to reach. So, I guess the question we're trying to answer this morning is how effectively are we doing that job of crossing those cultures, or those barriers of culture, of race, of gender. And with that, I will introduce our first presenter, who's white and male and from Alabama, Cushing.
Good morning. My name is Cushing Phillips. I am an alcoholic. By the grace of God, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the example of you people in my life, I have not had to live as a drunk since April 7th, 1988. For that, I'm profoundly grateful. And I want to thank GSO whenever they hear this recording or if there's any representative in the fellowship here for including me and for the loving invitation. I was sitting here trying, and much as John had shared in his opening remarks, trying to figure out, my only assumption was that I was the link back to our past. Because I'm a grumpy middle-aged white fellow with a pot belly, and I'm conservative, and then, you know, John cleared it all up for me, so I'm very grateful for that, and we'll get there. Is AA reaching minorities? And if we go with the standard discussion, African Americans or blacks, Hispanic, be they Central or South American, or be they Mexican, various religious minorities, although I don't think anybody in the United States really looks at religion as a minority or a majority. In the South, we still do. You know, you're not a Baptist. So, well, that's all right. There is hope for you. But and I look around my home group when I first walked in there, and I look around my home group today, and the only answer I can say is no. I remember my first year at conference. I was very grateful to be allowed to serve Alcoholics Anonymous in 2005 and 2006. And our then Southeast Regional trustee, Dick G., was making an exiting talk on Saturday morning. All the rotating trustees do that. And he commented on how very little progress we seem to have made, not in our literature, not in our thoughts, not in our words, but in the reality of the room. When I look around the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, we started off with, you know, two middle-aged white guys. And while there are a great many members of Alcoholics Anonymous who do not fit that mold, is it really evened up? I don't know. I look back in my own area, Area 1, Alabama, Northwest Florida, and in 2004, 2005, we had, since our inception, we had been building or adding districts based upon, you know, populations and geography, and we stopped, and they all of a sudden, you know, they used to go from left to right, top to bottom, because we like to read that way. And then you started getting really strange numbers thrown in the mix because we all of a sudden decided that the Eastern Shore didn't want to be with Mobile and they didn't want to be with Gulf Shores, and then they added Gulf Shores, and it's all. And then in 2004, 2005, we added District 24, an Hispanic language district. And that was very good, and it was very needed. Our population of Spanish-speaking members who find it very difficult to hear the message in a language they do not speak. They can hear the language of the heart. They know that they are loved and that they are welcome. But try to explain to someone who does not speak your language, how do you write a fourth step? How do you make direct amends to an employer that has fired you? How do you do these things? And you know, maybe they can do it straight from the book. I haven't read their book. I don't speak the language. One of the opportunities I hope to take this weekend is that there are a number of meetings throughout this this venue that will be in languages I do not speak. And I'm so looking forward to sitting in one of them and feeling completely lost, knowing that I'm at home. There appear to be some very specific and very real challenges. And as we brought them into the service structure and attempted to help them, it was good. And recovery was growing in that section of Alabama. I am a little troubled that every time their DCM gives a report, a district, every other DCM gives a district report, and people get up and get coffee and go smoke because we really don't care about your picnic. The DCM for District 24 gives up and gives the report, and at first we were encouraging because we were so happy that he was there. It's now been 6 years. I think it's time to stop looking at it like it's a freak show. And start recognizing the fact that they are alcoholics just like the rest of us. I love in the chapter, Working with Others, Bill says that we should get to know somebody who is most interested in him, perhaps his wife, and find out something about them so that we can know how to approach them by knowing how we would like to be approached if the tables were turned, if the shoe was on the other foot. And I believe that that is the secret in carrying the message to anybody who is not me. Is finding as much as I can about them. You know, I remember a young lady, Carrie, who wanted to start challenging this problem, this dilemma of crossing racial boundaries. And we have a community just east. Is it east? Just east of Montgomery. It's called Shorter. Dog tracks there. It's great. And they have a predominantly African-American population. And they have a predominantly dying group of alcoholics. And we couldn't seem to get them to get in their cars and drive 40 miles to Montgomery to come sit at the Church of the Ascension in the Episcopal over in the Garden District in Montgomery to listen to us expound about alcoholism and recovery from it. So Carrie started a meeting at the community center there in the projects. She eventually left. She passed away sober, went to the big meeting in the sky. But that meeting's still going on. It wasn't because Carrie did something great. She just carried the message down where they lived. That's what was needed. We didn't need to figure out some new way to say it. We just needed to make sure that it was in front of them and that they knew that it was for them too. Listen to me, us and them. God, that will kill Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just us. I remember my first year at up at conference, and he'll kick me when I get close, but or hit me. That's why he's sitting right there. My first year at conference, we had much loving debate. We were looking at rewriting or changing the pamphlet to the gay and lesbian alcoholic. There's a meeting at 9:30. Are you a gay alcoholic, or are you an alcoholic who happens to be gay? And probably all of you say, I'm not even answering that question. And the question we were looking at, was it sexual orientation or was it sexual preference? Because we had come to understand that there was a point of political correctness about whether it is a preference, a choice, or whether it is an orientation, a state of being. And we had much loving debate on how to pick exactly the right words so that we would not offend the incoming or the newcomer alcoholic. I don't know about anybody else, but when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was very difficult to not offend me. I took offense at everything. I knew that you were talking about me, and much worse, you were talking about me while I sat in the room. I absolutely believe that if we continue as a fellowship to segregate ourselves into this minority and that group and that minority and this group, if we continue to say the older American gets their very own pamphlet, and the African American gets their very own pamphlet, and the gay and lesbian get their very own pamphlet, and the old fat white guy gets his very own pamphlet. Oh, we got an entire book. It's okay. If we continue to look at ourselves as us and them, I think that we're missing the boat. It isn't, are we reaching out to minorities, to groups who are not exactly like us? We do that every day when we stick out our hand in a meeting. I've never met an alcoholic who wasn't different. The question is, are we carrying the message to them? Not some political agenda, not some socially approved idea. But the absolute fact that if you're an alcoholic like me, and let me tell you how I drank, let me tell you how I tried to quit, let me tell you about the insanity at 4 o'clock in the morning when if I don't get a drink, God help whoever stands between me and the next one. Let me tell you how I found this recovery. Let me tell you about the steps I took. Let me tell you about what I have found. And let me share with you the joy in that journey. Let me walk with you shoulder to shoulder, whether we look alike, talk alike, think alike, eat the same food, I don't care. If you're an alcoholic, you're not in a minority in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all we are. And when I walked in the rooms, I was so vitally different. And if you had sat me down and said, it's okay, Cushing, it is possible for a homosexual to get sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have turned and walked away. But you didn't. You said, we know how you feel. And because you had shared with me a little bit of your life, I knew that you weren't lying. And you said, if you'll walk with us, you don't ever have to feel that way again. And I did. And I haven't. And I'm grateful. I hope that I've touched somewhat on what they wanted me to talk about. But what I wanted to talk about was I love you. And I owe everything in my life to you. And that was my cue that I should have already shut up. I hit the note. Thanks.
Thank you, Cushing. Our next presenter, this microphone is annoying. Our next presenter is Barbara S. from Indiana. Barbara.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Barbara, and I am an alcoholic. And I am truly grateful to God and His fellowship for my sobriety today. My sobriety date is October 7th, 1998. My home group is the Friday Night Hope Group. So if you're ever up in Hammond, Indiana at 7:30 on a Friday night, stop by and see us. We'd love to have you. The topic is AA reaching minorities. And when I got that loving invitation on Mother's Day from Rick, and I was going, that was the end of a wonderful day for me. And I said yes, because I am a woman, which is a minority in AA, and I'm a black woman in minority. That is a lot of minorities in AA. There's also American Indian, and I had to look at that because I sobered up with one American Indian lady, and they're women. And when I sobered up, there weren't about four or five or six women sitting around the tables in a room full of 40 men. So for me, I had to think about my own experience. How I got here, just like everyone else. I drank, I ended up in jail, and all the misery that goes with it. But when I can tell you one thing for sure, when I walked into the rooms, I did notice that there weren't any African Americans. But the members of that group opened their hands and extended it to me, and they offered me bowls of candy and pots of coffee. And they told me the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And welcome to the Early Birds group, along with a meeting schedule, a newcomer's packet, and they offered up a phone list with the couple of women who were there. They gave their phone numbers to me. So as the days moved into weeks, about 3 months, I still didn't see any more African-American or women. On a good day, we might get 9 women. And I didn't ask where the other African-Americans was, let alone the women, because I was still didn't understand AA, and I was still complaining about my life. So, you know, that wasn't important at the time. And I kept hearing about sponsorship. You need a sponsor. I didn't know how or where to get one. For me, the men at the Tuesday night shaky table meeting gave me a woman's phone number and told me to call her. She's going to sponsor you. I said, okay. And I'm thinking, that's my beginning. You know, the AA members are reaching out to me as a minority. And then I thought I would have a chance to answer all these questions, like where are all the blacks, where are all the women's, you know. So I thought the group really went out their way, and they found somebody for me just like me. Well, that was true. The Tuesday night shaky table group did find a woman, and she was white, sober, and she sponsored me. So for me, it crossed the line right there because I couldn't ask her still yet, what, you know, where are the African Americans? You know, she said, honey, we're all alcoholics. I'm going to guide you through the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And that's what she did. She introduced me to this program, a sober routine, morning and evening prayer, meditation, reading the AA literature, and started me out on steps 1, 2, and 3, traditions 1, 2, and 3, and 12-step calls. And that was the way she worked. And she never drove. She never drove a car. She called and said, you pick up Sue and Jane in the big book, and we're going to 12-step this woman. Where I come to find out, she sponsored about 8 women, and there was another African-American woman that she sponsored. See, she didn't care what race, creed, or color you was. She just knew you were a drunk woman and you needed help. And that's how I learned that this program does reach out to minorities. It was the beginning. So one day she would say, Barb, I need you to go and pick up Jane, and there's a woman who's really had been in a bad accident, and she needs your help. And I was afraid. I was afraid because I didn't know what to say to this woman. And she would tell us, point blank, you got more in common than I do with her. She want to know how you stay sober one day. She don't want to hear about how many years I have. She wants to hear you tell her what happened to you and how you stay sober one day at a time. And I did. You know, and I didn't think I had anything to offer. And once again, I found out everyone that comes through the doors of AA got something to offer up. If not your misery, you can offer the recovery from that misery. Another way I found out that AA reaches minority is getting involved in a home group. You know, I was taught I don't come in and get mine and go. The AA's reached out to me, and it made me a greeter at the door. And then I started to see African-Americans, and I started to see more women. We had a DCM who was very active. He would come to the home group business meeting, and he would share about what was going on in AA. And that's when I realized Alcoholics Anonymous was bigger than meetings that I was attending. I didn't know anything other than, you know, the 12 steps and the big book. So he got my attention. He began to ask for volunteers to travel with him to the area service meetings. Every time he spoke about the fellowship as a whole, he would say, if you're grateful, be of service. Let's get out of your comfort zone and come see what you're saying no to. And I heard that. I wanted to see what AA had to offer other than me not drinking a day at a time. Well, I'm here to tell you that during the next two-year period, my meetings expanded to other cities close to Hammond. I found meetings out in Gary, Indiana called the Ironwood Group. Then I saw minorities. I saw blacks like myself. And they pointed out other meetings in Gary, Indiana. My next expansion would be I was asked to chair temporarily in the Latino community. And again, there were no women. And again, there were no blacks. So then I asked the question, where are they? And they told me, well, we don't need to travel from city to city. The meeting is right down the street, so we don't have to go anyplace else, you know. And I heard that, and I'm going, no, AA is bigger than that. And that's what I held on to. But I did want more of this fellowship. So I started volunteering at the yearly Lake County Fair with the AA literature. And it does reach the minorities. And what do I found out for me from my own experience? People would come up to me and ask, you know, how does this AA thing work? And I just simply tell them, very well for me. And point them to the rack. See, I'm not there to promote anything. I'm just making sure that the racks are filled. And I also found out the biggest secret is that when you go to the bathroom, the literature leaves. So. So I would replace the Spanish-speaking literature, the African-American pamphlets, the women pamphlets, you know, and what AA does and doesn't do. And that is so important because a lot of people picked it up because they thought AA was a cult. They had to change their religions. You know, and for me, that was just total misinformation. And what I've learned from my own experience is any question I have is in the literature, and I just need to look into it and read it. And I'm grateful that this fellowship taught me that I can read and understand and then ask somebody if I don't understand what's going on or what this pamphlet means. So getting involved in my home group, I continue to volunteer, and I just wanted to broaden my own horizon. You know, the message of AA is really clear. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I'm a woman, and yes, I'm a black woman. But the bottom line is this. I care more about your life than I do your feelings. I don't want to hear you come in and tell me that I'm different because I am. Because if you want to go with minorities, you can put me in about three different categories. Okay? So the bottom line is, get sponsorship. See, my first sponsor and my sponsor since then carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, not the mess. They told me that important sponsorship, I sponsor women. And for me, the minority women that I sponsor has been the biggest blessing to me because there's always been at least one of my sponsees that speaks Spanish. And they go with me to those Spanish-speaking districts and they translate. There's also been a Spanish-speaking Latin man that would go with me and meet me at a meeting to translate this message of hope, to let them know what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, when I walked into the rooms of AA, I was the only black woman there, and that went on for many years. So taking away the excuse, I am different, is why I'm here today. Because this program saved my life, and when it saved my life, it gave me a life. I, too, have been privileged to sit at the conference. I'm Barbara Symington, Panel 59, Area 22, Northern Indiana, seated delegate. And I'm assigned to Policies and Admissions Committee of the General Service Conference. And how did I get here? Because you people taught me. And you elected me to serve. And that's all I am, as a trusted servant. There are no titles here. I'm an alcoholic first. Because the moment I forget that, I will die. So I want to thank you all. And I'm here to tell you that AA does reach out. Let's look at our similarities and not our differences. Your hands are as long as you want them to be and reaching out to any minority. Are you reaching out to the person sitting next to you in the meeting? Are you offering up your phone number? Are you explaining what the requirement for AA membership is? My hands are pretty long today because you showed me how to make them long. And you took away every excuse that I had for not being a member of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank you for allowing me to serve today. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Our next presenter is Ramon M. from Texas. Ramon?
My name is Ramon Marroquin, and I'm an alcoholic. It's been truly by the grace of God, Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, people just like you, Manuel and Daniel, that I'm sober today, and for that I'm real grateful. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on March the 3rd, 1981, and thank God I haven't had a drink since. I walked into a meeting that was real scary. There was no one this color at all. And I'll tell you what, when you run out of Mexicans and you got to go to honkies for help, you know you're in trouble. And I was in trouble. I walked into this building at 1633 18th Street in Corpus Christi, Texas, the Alanos Group, and there was this gentleman behind a coffee bar, and he had something in his back pocket, and it looked like a flashlight. He went like this, put it under his chin, and it made his voice sound real gravelly and mechanical. He said, "They got a meeting going on right now, get in there." And went like this. Scared the hell out of me. So much for the attraction, rather than get in there. I went in there, and I was staring at the floor, and the first empty chair I saw, I sat down, and I had just left MHMR with this counselor. I'd been going to counseling to fix my life because it was a mess. And this was my last session. And at the beginning of the session, this lady said, "By the way, do you drink?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, a little." And I went on and on and on. I was real angry that day. And I went on for an hour and a half. Our sessions were normally an hour. And I just went on and on. I don't know why I'm coming here. It's not working. My life's getting worse. And she had left. Between my next to the last session and my last session, she left. Left with a friend of mine. And turned out to be my best friend because he kept her. Yeah, it's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. And I just went on and on and on and on. And she just let me vent, I guess. And at the end of the session, she said, "Well, you might try AA." And this was on Brownlee Street, which is 13th Street. And this meeting was on 18th Street. So five short little blocks over I went. And that's when Bill saw me and ordered me in that meeting. And people were talking about me. And I wondered, how in the hell did they know I was coming? Because even I didn't know I was coming. And I thought, maybe the lady psychologist called them and said, "I'm sending you a fresh one." And that's how self-centered I was. But it was real terrifying because, like I said, there was no one this color in there. And it was right after that Kool-Aid party that they had in Johannesburg. And I figured, maybe this is another one of these deals. And they kept talking about this big book and big book and big book. And I envisioned someone was going to come up with a big book and turn over the pages and information. But the third person or fourth person that shared, they say, "Would you like to say something?" And I said, "My name's Raymond and I'm an alcoholic." And I started crying. I said, "My wife left me. And I'm not going to drink anymore forever. And I'm not going to smoke cigarettes no more forever. And I'm not going to have anything to do with no damn women no more forever." And everybody, "Well, I don't drink and I don't smoke." So anyway, I don't know why it was so important in the beginning that there'd be someone this color. I don't know. Because it doesn't matter now. For some reason, it did then. Halfway through the meeting, this couple come in, which later I found out normally didn't make that meeting. "We're not going to make that meeting," he said, "but something told us, let's go to the club." It was a clubhouse. And they sat right in front of me. And this guy's wife was my neighbor when I was a youngster. And I had a crush on this little girl. But she was one of those real nice little girls that wouldn't have anything to do with a bum like me. So, you know, I never did approach her, but I held her in real high esteem. And she was this color. And when they asked her to share, she said, "My name is, and I'm an alcoholic." And I said, "Wow, this can happen to nice people, too, because after all, I was nice." But it was important that day. And after the meeting, she said, "You know, stay here. Steve is taking me somewhere, and he'll be back to talk to you." So I stayed there, and they take me into this literature room, and they started to try to talk to me. I was doing a lot of talking. And Steve said, he looked me straight in the eye and said, "I understand, and I want to help." And I believed him. I don't know why I believed him, but I believed him. And see, and that's part of the message that I have to carry. I don't have any other message. This is what happened to me. This is how I used to be. What really helped me in that first meeting is that you were talking about yourself, and you were putting words to my feelings. All I could tell you was, you know, I feel good or bad. I couldn't tell you any of the other stuff. His sponsor, Earl, told me, you know, there are no guarantees for sobriety, but service work may give you a little edge. And I wanted every little edge I wanted, so I got into service work, and I became the group's secretary. And then GSR and on and on and on and on. And then when I was area chairman for Area 68, Panel 42, we kept inviting the lower Rio Grande Valley to come to our meetings, and we were just not understanding why they wouldn't show up. So our workshops rotate through the area, and we were in Brownsville once, and this lady, DCM, attended our meeting, and she said, you know, and she had this us and them kind of thing. Well, those people up there, and they this and they that, and I tried to reassure that it was us, but we go to your meetings, but we just sit there and we don't understand. And as luck would have it, or coincidence, there was a lady from California at that meeting, and she shared about translating equipment, something that we hadn't even thought about. And then this lady, DCM, said, and no one has ever come to our district. And being area chairman, it was up to me to put on these workshops. So I said, you find us a place, and we'll come down. So she found us a place, and I had the area PI CPC chair and the Grapevine chair and the intergroup rep chair. And I had about five area chair people go down there. And then at the next area meeting, we discussed us buying translating equipment. But the way our procedures are is that you bring a proposal up to the area and you discuss it. And then if it passes, you take it back to the groups for 6 months, and you bring it back 6 months later, and then you vote on it up or down. So this could have taken a year. So some of the people in the room said, well, let's go directly to the groups for donations. And that's what they did. They went straight to the groups, and the groups, through a separate contribution, bought translating equipment. So now in the Southwest Texas area, which we're in now, has translating equipment. But if you look around the room, you can see that this color is not represented a whole lot. Well, but in fact, there's three of us. Okay. There are more blacks in this room. There's four times more blacks in this room than in that entire Corpus Christi AA. And I don't know why that is. Yeah. And but I was told that all I have to share is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then maybe get through this translating equipment so that people can get that message. I was told by my sponsors certain things that still hold true, like simple things, like whenever you ask to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, wear a coat and a tie. Not to impress yourself or anyone in the room, it's just a respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would much rather wear a coat and a tie than to go back and explain to my sponsor why I didn't. This is just easier this way. So that, trust me, it is. But that is the message that I have to carry, my story. I came in here, I was scared to death. I asked people, how many of these meetings do I need to come to? And this Earl said, that's a good question. We suggest that you go to one meeting more than days you drank. If you drank one day a week, we suggest you go to two meetings a week. said, if you drank, say, as many as three, we suggest you go to four. And I said, oh, my God. He said, what's the matter, son? I said, well, I don't know any eight-day weeks. He said, so you drank every day? I said, yes, sir, I did. He said, well, you may need to go to a noon meeting to get your eighth. And then so I went along for a couple of weeks, and then I said, hey, Earl, when can I stop coming? And he said, well, you know, that's a good question. He always said that's a good question. And he went, and he pointed around the room, are going to keep an eye on you. And when you're at a point when we feel you don't have to come, we'll let you know. And I am real glad of this, because I had all this stuff in my mind. And when I asked the question, they gave me an answer, and I didn't have to be preoccupied with that. I could get onto the business of learning how to stay sober. I went to a second meeting the first day at a 24-hour group. Excuse me. And there was a lot of stranger folks there. There were street people with spiked hair, green hair, and blue hair. And I guess I was just resentful because I didn't have any hair. But I started hearing things about insane asylums and straitjackets and the loss of businesses and families and homes. And, man, I started feeling pretty good. And I leaned, there was this guy sitting next to me, and I would lean and I say, I haven't done that. I haven't done that. Damn, I didn't even think of doing that. After a while, he kind of sat up and turned around and looked me straight in the eye and said, well, keep drinking. And I got it. That as bad as my life was, it could get worse. And it scared the heck out of me. So, anyway, I am so glad for Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so glad that someone took an interest in me March the 3rd, 1981, and taught me how not to drink one beer one day at a time. And for that, I am eternally grateful, and I'd like to thank the General Service Office for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you, Raymond. I said Ramon, he said Raymond, so I'll take it. I think it's Raymond. We've got a little time left here. We can have 15 or 20 minutes for sharing from the floor. There's a microphone about halfway back in the room. If you would like to share, please line up behind the microphone there, and I'd ask that you limit your sharing to 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll take the first person at the microphone.
My name is Jenny C., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jenny.
There's one thing that, through my experience, that I have learned about being a minority person is that when I first came around, I said, where were all the Asians? And they said, why don't you go and chair a meeting and you could be the one to welcome the people in the door when they do come. So I chaired a meeting in Chicago where I had gotten sober, and there were no Asians that came in through that detox, and they were taking in people 20 and 30 every week. And every week I went down there and I brought a speaker and they shared their experience, strength, and hope. And what I've learned in my journey through AA, and I've been here 26 years, is that I've broken many, many barriers that I didn't know that my God wanted me to break. I became the first woman to sit on the board for the International Women's Conference, and I've done all that things, and now I work on the district level. But, you know, one of the things that I found out is there are still a lot of people out there dying from alcoholism, regardless of their race, creed, and color. And what I found is that it could be culture that keeps people out from these doors because they're ashamed. Like in the Chinese in New York City, they're ashamed. Usually it's the wives are ashamed of their husbands. And I have found, like, where I live now in the Twin Cities area, we have these great big huge barriers of language barriers of Hmong and of Vietnamese. And, yeah, they want sobriety. They want to stop. And when we go and look for literature for them, there's no literature available. We try to communicate the message as best we can, and we try to make them feel welcome so that they will come back to the meetings, but it's really, really hard when they don't speak English and they look puzzled. And now the next frontier for me personally is that I'm going to go and reside in Hawaii, because in Hawaii there is sobriety and there is no sobriety. The sobriety that I found on the outer islands is that there's a lot of people who want sobriety, and it's an epidemic over there. But what they found was that there's a lot of people there with time, but they came over from the mainland, and there are no big sobriety among the native Hawaiians, and they are dying because of that, and they never get the message, and they're very proud of being native Hawaiian, but for some reason they look at me and they accept me as one of them rather than one of the mainlanders. And so for me, I see that as the next frontier for myself, where I can go and help carry the message and sponsor women. And that's what's important, is just carrying the message. And it doesn't matter what color you are, because the funniest thing is that when I go and shake the hand of a newcomer and they're shaking and they shy away, that tells me that they still came in with those predispositions where they dislike you because of your color. And I find that even in the Twin Cities where I live. So it's not something like brand new. So I just say, it's your loss. Have a good day. Come back. What I've learned. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take everybody that's in line there. We've got several people to speak, so I would ask that you limit your talk to 2 minutes. Thank you.
I'm Bruce. I'm an alcoholic. I was looking through the program this morning and saw this topic, and I thought, what in the world are they having this meeting for? And I had never been to a convention before, and so I was talking to a guy who had been to 4 conventions on the way over here on the bus. And I said, so what do I need to go to today? He says, you know that meeting in the book that you saw that you thought you would never go to? That's the meeting you need to go to. And it's the same way I've gotten sober in this program. It took me to walk into this meeting and sit down to realize that my sponsor is Mexican, and I have never thought about him as Mexican, because when I got in here, I didn't care. I knew I was the minority when I walked in here. It was me, because all of you seemed to have something that I wanted. Wow, I didn't expect to cry. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Craig. I'm from Dallas, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Craig.
And when I first got to, first of all, I want to thank the committee for this topic. And when I got to AA on September the 23rd, 1991, I walked into a group that was predominantly Caucasian. And if I wasn't as willing as the dying could be, I wouldn't have walked in that room. But, you know, my choices were slim and none. And I'm so grateful that people welcomed me there. And in a community of a couple of million people with more than a couple of hundred meetings, there's one meeting in Dallas, Texas or one group that's predominantly black. And that means that there's hundreds of meetings that are not. All the meetings are integrated, but the point is that I think that in my case, I just had too high of a threshold for pain. And I think that that's something that makes me go to meetings and try to be there by attraction, because I want people to know that, you know, we do recover. So thank you for this meeting.
Thank you.
I'm Richard, an alcoholic from the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Hi, Richard.
I'm a minority. I'm the only guy here with a feather in my hat. This issue touches me deeply, because until I become you and until we become them, this shit will continue. When I look at the religious differences in this country and hear the prejudice against our Muslim brothers and sisters, how in the world are we reaching out to the 1 billion Muslims in this world? As I look at my black friends, and I relate to people of different minorities, because I am one, I have lived overseas. I have hitchhiked around the world. And when they become me, and when I'm the only white guy, or when I'm the only American, or when I get the hell out of suburban America, my least favorite place on earth, with the white insular, isolated lives that we live in suburban America. We will continue to be so challenged of seeing this message moved. When this gentleman said he didn't feel welcome, go to that black meeting as the only white and try to relate. Because we don't have a clue what's going on until I become you. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Gary. I'm an alcoholic from Los Gatos, California. I am a mixed-race, multiply disabled, observant Jew. I had no idea that I would ever find anybody here like me. I can say that over a lot of time, I have been to a lot of meetings in a lot of places. My home group for my first 11 years in this program was a predominantly black Southern Baptist meeting. I have never felt unwelcome once, at least from Alcoholics Anonymous. There is another issue, though, about people who belong to minority religions, and that is that we become unwelcome in our own communities when we make this decision. I can't tell you how many times in my early sobriety I heard the term, Jews are not alcoholics. And I have heard the same thing from friends in this program of other minority religions. God bless my Irish Catholic friends in this program. I don't think they've ever heard that. And so I have made a decision, and I know other people have made the decision, and this has a lot to do with personal preference and with anonymity, that I have been to the rabbi of every congregation in Santa Clara County, California, and said that if you have someone in your congregation that you need to have them talk to someone in this program, you give them my name and phone number. And I probably get two or three calls a year. And there are at least a half a dozen people that I know are in the program that began with those conversations. So I don't know exactly how we do this other than to encourage people who want to make the choice of putting themselves out there who are in minority religions to say, I will be a resource for my community. Thank you.
My name is Leticia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leticia.
Welcome. I'm from San Antonio, so welcome to my hometown. I didn't get sober here. I had to move to Washington, D.C. to get sober in 1989. And I moved back to my hometown 10 years ago because I wanted to be around people who looked like me and talked like me and had experiences like me. I don't find them in AA here. I don't know if anybody's tried to get to meetings in San Antonio, but we have only maybe a handful, two, three English-speaking meetings within the inner city, within the loop. You have to go out to the suburbs to meetings, and that's where I have to go. I live in the Latinos community, and there are no meetings here. It also affects our African-American communities here. People tell me all the time, well, just start a meeting. I cannot tell you how many meetings have been started and have not made it in the inner city. So this is a reality that I think that we need to look at within AA and you know, those in the leadership of AA, that we need to look at how to help inner cities keep their meetings going. There's an issue because there's a lot of issues. I'm an academic, so I've been studying this. I did an internship trying to study this. So it's not just opinion. There's some data that goes along with this. The second misconception here with San Antonio, with the inner city meetings, is that all Latinos speak Spanish. I cannot talk to you in Spanish. I cannot sit in a Spanish meeting and get what I get in English meetings. So we've been here for over 100 years. We don't speak Spanish. We've lost our language, unfortunately. A lot of us, and those are Latinos that are suffering from this disease of alcoholism, young males, young females, that aren't getting the help. We need home groups, places where sobriety is born, because that's what will tie people to this program. And we're not seeing that in our communities either. You know, I have time after time where Anglos come and try to tell me about my own community. And I'm telling you, I know my community, and we do have a need for more meetings. We're 60% Latino in San Antonio, and we're not showing those numbers in meetings. So thank you.
Hi, I am Rolando, and the alcoholic.
Hi, Rolando.
The other brown Ramon, okay? as Ramon say, I don't know why you got a discomplex on my color, because that's not happened here, because that is happening when I was a child, you know, about 5, 6 years old, because in my mentality it was the white people is smarter than me. So when I come in the United States, I was sober, so I didn't start to attend the English speaking meeting because I didn't feel good, because I don't speak English. So I can share you a lot of experience, but the time is too short. So I want to tell you about the help me was one delegate that we have in Connecticut. That is my area, Area 11, Connecticut. So then he started to come into, he doesn't speak English, absolutely nothing. And he started to attend a Spanish-speaking meeting. No interpreter, nothing. But he was enjoying the meeting. That is when I start to see something different. And then the other thing helped me is my sponsor. My sponsor doesn't speak Spanish. When work the steps, he followed his English step book or big book, and I followed my Spanish book. Now, the experience right now is the area he bought equipment and interpreter, and then opened to me big hole, you know, because now, before I missed the conventions over there in Connecticut, you know, because I said, why I gotta go there? I don't understand. So, but nobody reject me. All the time, the smile, I can see in the eyes, but I said, no, I don't speak English. Something happened. So then, my home group now, we have step meetings every week. We discuss our step in Spanish, read and discuss for 2 or 3 weeks, and then, yeah, we find the sponsors for the group because that helps us. It's not Spanish. It's English speaking. Somebody translate. So then she provides the speaker in English. Why we decide to do this is because it breaks the barrier of the language. Because the newcomer now, they don't feel different. I did before, but now it's the good experience that we have. In my home group, you know, we got the volunteer to interpret. But finally, we find out, you know, for the volunteers, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In my home group budget, we put the money for pay somebody to interpret it in that meeting. Last week, we got a young people speaker for the step. He's about 20 years old. We had 3 newcomers, Mexican newcomers, 17, 16, and 20 years old. Imagine what happened. They don't see the difference now. Because they say something happened to him, something happened to us. That's no matter what. Finally, I want to tell you, because my sponsor recommended me, go to the area meeting. I said, I don't speak English. Go to the area meeting, Rolando. He said, no, I don't speak English. He said, where do you find any bilingual bar? No bilingual bar. You want a drink, you go over there. You stay over there. So that's what I want to say. Thank you for this opportunity here and this meeting. I enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Kenny. I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God and everybody in this room, I've been sober since March 3rd, Ramon, of 1987. I'm also a recovering conspiracy theorist. And I'm mentioning that because somehow I have this kind of knee-jerk reaction to always try to dig into things. And so when I was looking through the program, I noted right away that this particular meeting was in a 00 numbered room. And I started looking at, well, you know, as like Alicia, I'm an academic, and so I started trying to examine the data. And so I just want to read the names of the other meetings that are in the 00 rooms. We have AA in the Caribbean West Indies. We have Is AA Reaching Minorities? We have, let's see, I should have marked these out. I'm in denial about my age and my eyesight. We have a meeting that has to do with the deaf and hard of hearing. We have a meeting that has to do with cyberspace in the 00 rooms, and that's something of a minority group, too, in its own right. And then, of course, we do have some other, meetings like the Great Reality Within Us and so forth. And so a question could be put out there. We have meetings in French. We have meetings from Central America, all in 00 rooms. So is that a coincidence, or is that a function of the reality of the society that we live in? The question is AA reaching minorities? And I guess that depends on who you ask. If you ask me, my answer is yes, of course it does. If you ask me, is it doing well enough, my answer is no, it's not. However, there have been drastic changes, and I appreciate hearing the speakers and hearing about some of the history of this program, because things have changed a lot. But like Morgan Freeman said in Driving Miss Daisy, they ain't changed all that much. You know, we can do better, but what makes this such a complicated issue from where I sit is the fact that this is not an AA problem. This is a society problem. AA is, in fact, a reflection of the greater society, but we are not going to change the issues that we are trying to address. But the good news is we are trying to address those issues. So growing up in the 50s, I was exposed to a lot of things that my kids have not been exposed to because things have changed. Growing up in AA, I have found that AA is, in fact, like I said, a very much a microcosm of the greater society. You know, last night at dinner on the Riverwalk, I'm sitting with some lovely folks and a dear friend of mine who's been sober over 30 years, and she was going around the table asking people, were they going to the dance? And when she got to me, she said, well, I know you can dance. So, I mean, you know, the good news is that I'm sober today. You know, I'm sober today. And so I work on trying to understand rather than being understood, because people in this room that helped me to save my life and continue to do that a day at a time told me that that's what I need to do. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Wayne. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Washington, D.C.
Hello, Wayne.
And finding a black meeting in Washington, D.C. is not that difficult. Yet my home group is mostly white. I grew up black, male, and American, and as a result of that, I felt I've never had the right to discriminate against anybody. Okay. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a black alcoholic. I've stayed here long enough to become an alcoholic who happens to be black. When I look at the history of AA, I'm struck with having to accept that anything touched by God has to be all-inclusive. You told me I would be the last person to realize I got better. I would be the last person to realize I need help, and I'll be the last person to realize I got better. See, the fact that you see a black man here, AA has taught me to realize that that's your crap, and that I'm not any good at carrying your stuff. That's why I drank. They tell me if I spend 12 hours a day focusing on my stuff, spend the other 12 hours a day leaving your stuff alone, then I've had a successful day. AA, when you read the history, and I love reading the history. See, Dr. Bob didn't think this would work for women, but he said, send her on anyway. Bill was almost lynched in New York City because he tried to bring blacks into a meeting. But we change in spite of ourselves. That's what you told me. You said, Wayne, keep coming back and more will be revealed. If you got a problem with me being black and male, then they told me to have you talk to your sponsor. I have gone to meetings in this country where I knew I would not be accepted in the meeting before the meeting or the meeting after the meeting. But they felt that if I drug my ass over here, I needed a meeting. And nobody was going to stand in the way of me going to a meeting. I've gone down south to meetings where I've had people and they want to take me to the other fellowship. And they'll tell me, well, down here, white folks go to AA and black folks go to the other fellowship. I said, okay. You taught me acceptance. You taught me that I'm responsible for Wayne. So I don't, whatever you think is none of my business is what my sponsor teaches me. Now, like I said, AA is going to include me whether you like it or not. And so what you think is your business. I'm an alcoholic who happens to be black. Thank you.
Thanks, Wayne.
My name is Mel, an alcoholic.
Mel.
I'm sober today through God's grace and the principles of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for that I'm truly grateful. I never had it so good. You know, Wayne stole a lot of my thunder. I think he was, he stole my material. But I can tell you I've had the unique situation of being a member of one of the oldest black groups in the country, that's Parkside Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I got the message of hope and recovery. I now am the token, I'm going to say Negro, at Life or Death Group in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm the only black person in that group that's on a steady basis. But what I have learned about the disease of alcoholism, it's an equal opportunity ass-kicking disease, and it has no respect to the color of my skin. I know that some of the people that I talked to, I would have never drank with, and they wouldn't have drank with me. Matter of fact, they wouldn't have let me in their neighborhood, and I wouldn't have gone. However, one of the things, you know, when we start talking about the devastation of this disease that I have and a way up and out, it has no respect to the color of my skin. And I'm blessed for that. And like the gentleman said, this is God-given, and I don't think it has any respect to the color of one's skin. Yeah, there should be more meetings where black folks are represented or other minorities are represented. But the truth is, it is. I've been to the South, and I've been the only black in a meeting where it was Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm old enough to remember that at a time in Raleigh, North Carolina, there were white and colored water fountains. But in that meeting, they were talking about how I can save my life a day at a time. So I felt at home. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Gary, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Gary.
This is my second trip to San Antonio. I first came here 29 June 1961. When I first came here, I was at Lackland Air Force Base. San Antonio was segregated. Now it's not. That's a change. That was 49 years ago. I have had the honor and privilege of meeting quite a few of the Tuskegee Airmen, and we had conversations about how it felt to be the most distinguished flying unit in World War II and come home and be treated like a third-class citizen. And things are changing. Before I even knew what AA was, I had a lot of anger and hatred toward white people because of how I had been treated. And there's that word again, I. And things have changed. And in that word, I found out hatred and anger. In the middle of that was another word that starts with the letter I called ignorance. And that's a nasty tool that people use that they don't even know they have. And we have to deal with that. And AA is caught between a rock and a hard place because it says, if we have what you have to come to us if you're willing to go to any length. Well, I learned to put aside that hatred and that anger because I wanted to be sober. I went to several rehabs. I never finished one because I got kicked out of all of them. I never got to finish any of them. I got kicked out. And I told a judge once, I said, because I'm from New York, and he says, well, you got a little prison time here. I said, oh, time out. I found a place in Pennsylvania. He said, you can't go. You're still on probation. Your ass going to jail. And I learned these things through AA. There's a lot of meetings I went to. I did not feel welcome. That was okay. I asked my sponsor. He said, you got a meeting book? I said, yes. He said, what meeting to go to? I said, a 7:30 Tuesday meeting. He said, we'll go to another meeting. So I kept going. I kept coming back. I am sober. There's a lot of hard work to do, but it can be done. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Paula.
I think we're
I'm
out of time, Miss, so we're going to close at this time.
Pardon me?
We're out of time, so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
We took everybody that was in line before when I, we can't go on forever, so my apologies. But I want to thank everybody who shared. I want to thank, could we give our speakers our thanks? I would like to ask that we stand and close this meeting with the Responsibility Declaration. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible.